Drake May leading a touchdown drive to open the game, getting Patriots fans all excited. I was excited. I heard that. I said, oh, my goodness. It only took one game, and the offense is fixed.
Damn right.
One game, well, two games. It's the beginning of the second game. They have one game in the books, and now the second game starts. The offense is fixed. Drake May is making completions to Pop Douglas all up and down before he had to leave the game with the bubble guts there. He was hitting Hunter Henry. Stevenson was picking up yards. There was that. I think Douglas had a penalty on that opening drive, too, which wasn't great. But we'll get to the penalties here in a minute.
But all I didn't see the replay. That might have been one of those modern nitpicky ones where the receiver in motion.
It was an illegal shift or something.
Well, I think it's that thing where if you, like, rotate it all, they call you for you can't be moving forward at the snap. It's been one of their points of emphasis, which they can stick right up their keister. But no, I was very happy with the start, not surprising, because they came out, they're throwing the ball. Even I know they ran on the first play, but it was a pass play. It was a scramble. And it was like, okay, Alex Van Pelt is just going to – he's got a guy that likes to just throw the ball, likes to be in control back there. Let's build around that. And I thought we were well on our way. And then Alex Van Pelt started doing first down runs. And do you know what the first down runs got you?
Yes, I do, but let me refresh my memory.
Minus one, one, minus four. Those are your first half, first down runs.
Great.
What are we doing? Throw the ball. Let him cook. Even though I do think, you mentioned DeMario Douglas, I do think that was a blow to the offense. I do think.
It definitely was.
Like, not just the receptions. I think he had a couple catches early, but they were doing the motions, the orbit motions, the fake orbit motions. Like, they were moving him around. It was like, oh. The offense is kind of evolving a little bit here.
Right.
And then when he went out, I do think that cut into what they either thought they could do or could do. I don't know where it was like self-fulfilling prophecy. We're like, oh, we can't do that now, so we'll just run the ball again. Mm-hmm. It's like they regressed to their boring early season ways. But that first, I was excited. You know what I was rooting for?
What?
A win. That's how fun that start was.
Whoa.
No, I swear to God.
Whoa.
I swear to God.
Andy
it was
Hart
10-0.
Was looking for a victory.
Drake May's cooking, and I'm like,
oh, Mr. 0-17 over here.
I'm like, F it. We'll figure out how to get the number one pick some other day.
Right.
Let's just get a win across the pond. Let's get a feel good. He was well on his way. I was like,
I was rooting for a feel good, too, the whole time. Yeah.
Let's have a Drake May day. Let's have him throw for 400 yards over four quarters, four touch, like the whole thing. And then Alex Van Pelt was like, not so fast. Your fun is over. We're done here. We're running for no gain.
How about this for a number? In the first two drives, the Patriots ran 23 plays and held the ball for 13 minutes, just about, 6:28 and 6:31. So just under 13 minutes. Their entire time of possession in the game was 26:45. That was half of their time possessing the ball was in those first two drives for the entire game. That tells you a lot right there. And listen, it's a step up. I hate to even put it this way, but that's a massive step up from offensively what we've seen. They were ready. They were prepared. They had a plan. They were out there executing. It was a real football team. Like, you haven't seen that really with these guys. They got off to a 10-0 lead. A two-score lead. When's this team ever had a two-score lead? It's like, you know, like you see all that and you go, wow, there's really some potential here. And for the rest of the game, it was gone. I mean, there was really nothing. And as good as Drake May looked, I heard Jones saying this in the midday show a little bit, we can't get in the habit of just giving him a pass no matter what. There were some possessions throughout that where I thought he wasn't exactly on point and some of those accuracy issues popped up again. I know, tough to say that pretty quickly, but he's not a problem. I mean, he was the one bright spot of the entire game. And while he wasn't perfect, I'm not expecting him to be perfect, so I'm willing to look the other way on some of the smaller problems that he had.
Oh, you mean the guy in his second career game?
Exactly. And a lot of those problems, by the way, were his other receivers either dropping the ball, penalties on his veteran tight end, things that weren't really his fault, and a run game that, once again, could not put one foot in front of the other unless it was him out there running. And he was the only guy that could pick up any yards. Like, that can't happen. Ramondre Stevenson's back. I know he didn't practice all week. You don't have to practice all week to pick up 50 yards. I mean, he couldn't do anything. This was another week where your offense was completely one-dimensional, and that's asking too much of Drake May to just go out there and throw 100 times and win the game, even if it's against a bad team like Jacksonville. He's not ready for that yet. He's ready to give you what he's giving you, which is still very good.
Yeah, because what did he throw? 37 passes?
I think he was.
And some of them were late.
23 of 37, I
want
to say.
37 passes.
26 of 37.
I mean, you're right. Even as much of Drake May fan as I am, do I want him throwing the ball 50 times in his second NFL start?
No.
Even against the Jags defense? But the barometer I keep using for Drake May is very simple. If everybody had played at the level Drake May did yesterday, what would have happened?
I think they would have won.
Probably
pretty
easily.
They would have won that game. If the defense played as well as you
would
play, I mean, come on, yeah. No,
I'm not
no
looking
question.
For greatness. You can make a mistake here, make a mistake there, but just play at a representative professional level, and that's what you got from the quarterback position yesterday.
Yep.
You got good play at the quarterback position, and I would argue, more often than not, I feel like in the last 4+ years, they don't lose often when they get good quarterback play. The problem has been the quarterback. They've had bad quarterback play from
yep.
Cam Newton to Bailey Zappe to Mac Jones. And when they got competitive quarterback play, they usually won. Now you're getting competitive quarterback play and you're not really competitive. You get doubled up on,
yep.
right? Like you're not, it's a 2-score loss. And that's problematic. That's troublesome. And that's really too negative for my liking.
No, listen, I mean, you're right, though. I mean, it's negative or not, that's the truth. I also think that in the drop-off you're seeing in the defense, you're seeing an improvement in the offense based on, you know, what you had last year at the quarterback position and really all around. I'd say that these last two Drake May games have been offense in New England at a level they haven't been at since Brady was here, or maybe since the first Mac Jones year. But
sure.
Even that, I'd say May looks better than Mac looked in that
some of the
first
plays,
year.
That's the other thing that was jumping out to me.
That touchdown to Osborne was a great play. That was a great throw.
The throw to Hunter Henry, which I actually was like, is this a good idea? Okay, you got it through. I guess it's a good idea. I don't know if I would have done that. The throw down the left side to Booty. So now we got a right side booty. We got a left side booty. We got two booties are enjoying.
Sounds like a Rex and Effects.
Yes.
Right there,
No, they're making plays, and there could have been more. Hey, Polk, mix in a play. I know everybody's going to be like, oh, that was defended. Yeah, so was Hunter Henry down the middle of the field, and he caught it.
Yep.
You're allowed to catch the ball even when there's a defender near you or around you. Like, you're a professional,
that's
too.
That's George Pickens. You see his catch in the end zone? That was ridiculous.
But he had multiples last night.
Yeah, he was
He's
awesome.
Better than I thought he was. He's a legit stud receiver,
he is.
George Pickens.
He's a jackass, but he's definitely a stud.
Hey, Jalen Polk, I can guarantee you don't have better hands than George Pickens.
Yeah, I can
Jalen Polk,
agree with that.
You got to catch the ball sooner or later. You want to bench him? I'm all for benching
him. I wanted to bench him for this game.
Me too, but now more so.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's go take some calls here before we go to break. We'll start with Barry in New Bedford, who has a thought on Jerod Mayo. Hello, Barry.
Hey, guys. This is starting to remind me so much of David Culley when Houston hired him. You got a guy who was a career assistant, or he's had been longer in the league, limited experience as a coordinator, and a CEO of running an entire a team operation. Every week it's something new, whether it's offsides on a kickoff, an opening kickoff, 12 men on a punt. All these things come back to Mayo because it's a lack of discipline. It's a lack of control in the operation. Where are the adjustments in the second half between him and DeMarcus Covington trying to stop the run? Where are the adjustments? I know you're missing pieces. I know that Bentley's out and Barmore's out and you have missing pieces, but you have to find ways to plug guys in. It just seems to me he's lost control of this entire operation. And the press conference yesterday where he's going after guys, the off-field stuff's come. We don't know what's going on in practice. We hear all the stuff that's taking place on Twitter and Instagram. We hear stuff, guys getting arrested by the cops, people getting pulled over by police because it pops up on TikTok. But what's going on in practice, we don't know. It just seems to me, and this is what bothers me about Kraft. In normal situations, you hire a GM and the GM hires the coach. This was completely different. You gave the job to Mayo and you promoted Elliot Wolf. Then why not let Elliot Wolf pick the coach? Because if Elliot Wolf had a chance to pick the coach, I don't think it would have been Jerod Mayo.
You might be right about that, and thanks for the call. I think that there's a lot to question about the whole process of not interviewing anybody else, of knowing you're going to just have Jerod Mayo, and I do think there's something to be said about the GM, and listen, the GM and the head coach were the same person here for 20 years, so it was maybe not exactly an obvious thing for the Crafts when they were going about this process, but that's usually how it's done. You bring the GM in, he hires his coach, they talk about their philosophy for building the roster, and that's the way it goes. This was sort of just some retreads who are already here, who were promoted internally and who, despite wanting to do everything so differently from the way Belichick used to do it, brought back all of his old players with his scouts and his assistant coaches and all these other people except for him and his son, basically. I mean, and Alex Van Pelt, I guess. And that's it. I mean, really, it wasn't that much of a change as much as they wanted it to be. They wanted it to seem that way, but they also didn't want to lose whatever sense of control they felt they could have over people who were indebted to them in a way, right? Like, you're giving Jerod Mayo this big promotion. He owes you all this. Elliot Wolf probably wasn't going to go out there and get another GM job. You gave him that thing. So you kind of have that that control over what they do and who they work with and how they're supposed to feel about it. Like, do you think Elliot Wolf is sitting there going, man, if I just had a chance to hire my own coach, he's probably thinking, wow, I got a chance to be a GM. I don't care who the coach is. I'll just put the players out there. Yeah. You know, it's that type of thing. And I think that's what they wanted.
The funny thing is, it's almost a Belichickian philosophy. All these young coaches that he hired as interns and then raised and developed and kept and promoted and brought back was sort of his people, right? Yeah. People that he could trust. I think he
and
called
now
them.
They're all his podcast co-hosts.
Right, and those are his dependables, as he right. calls them. But that's sort of the mentality it seemed like they took. The one thing I will say, the caller brought up David Culley, and I don't remember all the details, but I think
he was a one-and-done in Houston, right?
And I think he was brought in the midst of turmoil to kind of be a grandfather figure, to be like a positive.
Just like in the wake of the Easterby stuff and
I think
all that,
Easterby,
right?
Deshaun Watson, there was rumors they were going to hire McCown because he was a Bible guy and they wanted a Bible. And I think they needed sort of a soft face, like just a likable grandpa who
and he
be
worked
the coach.
Under Reed, I think, right? Isn't he a Reed guy? So, like, you know, it wasn't like he was
no,
nobody.
He had credentials.
He had credentials, yeah.
But I think there was an intention there. This is a little different, like, you didn't perform a search. You made the decision 5 years earlier. Then you put it in writing, which seems to have expedited the end of the Belichick tenure here as well. And that's a part of the narrative. And then you mix in Mike Vrabel becomes available, and that kind of piqued everybody's interest outside the organization. Not necessarily inside, but fans, media were like, hey, that Vrabel guy was a pretty good coach down in Tennessee, and he's got ties to you. He's part of the family. He's been in your world. And I think that maybe undercut a little bit of the credibility of Gerard Mayo. And now when Gerard Mayo looks like he's a little over his head, that only strengthens the idea that, hey, maybe you should have hired an experienced coach like Mike Vrabel. So some of the circumstantial factors are also lumping on. But the biggest issue is the team is a mess right now.
Yeah.
And the head coach, as Devin McCourty said last night, when you have issues that are big picture issues, toughness, culture,
right.
Everybody looks at the head coach. Whether he's your friend or not, Gerard Mayo's the head coach, and he's the one that's going to be in the spotlight.
Yep. You mentioned Bill Belichick. He was on Pat McAfee today, and he had a lot to say. He's had a lot to say about the defense, about Gerard Mayo's comments after the game. And, well, he did everything short of showing up in a Trevor Lawrence jersey, I'd say, on the show. So we'll get to that. We'll get to his comments and play them for you right after this.